This is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
Look, we're going to shake things up.
On Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
I don't think we're asking the right question. I think the question we should be asking is, do you believe in this thing or not?
The Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
What do you mean? Of course martial arts training is relevant.
Now your hosts.
Let me save you some time. Get comfortable.
WSBT Radio's Sean Steyer.
Let's get started.
And former Irish quarterback, Evan Sharpley.
Stay sharp.
Glad to have you with us as we get ready for Virginia Tech Game 6 for the Fighting Irish, the 5-0 Fighting Irish. Glad to have you with us on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. He's former Notre Dame quarterback and baseball player Evan Sharpley. I'm Sean Steyer, Leprechaun Lunch, 96.1 WSBT. Well, it looks like October outside now. It's like... This is usually what it looks like in late October, but it has hit us. If you've been with us on 96.1 WSBT this morning, we apologize. We've had some technical difficulties. It looks like everything is back on track. So knock on whatever this is, Formica, fake something, knock on it. We should be good for the rest of the day. How you doing over there, Mr. Sharpley?
Great.
All right.
Beautiful fall day.
It is.
I love it. Brisk.
I know. Got my sweatshirt on. Got my baseball sweatshirt on. It's
always October.
That's right. It is always October. And it's my Royals always October. They're not going to be playing in October very much. But at least I can look at teams like Milwaukee and Colorado and see a lot of former Royals out there playing.
Kind of like the Tigers.
That's right.
There's Tigers players everywhere.
Everywhere.
In the postseason every year.
Justin Verlander, he'll be in action today against Corey Kluber.
I think the entire Tigers pitching staff from 8 years ago are all in the postseason right now.
That's right.
Or over the last 8 years.
That's right. You got Scherzer with the Nationals,
yep, Verlander
with the Astros.
You've got Price.
That's right. David
also,
Price.
Rick Porcello.
Porcello with the Red Sox.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I think that's it, but there may be a couple more.
What about Zimmerman?
I don't know.
Is he still...
I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, in any case, it is. We're gonna spend a little bit of time a little bit later talking some baseball. We'll talk Cubs and the whole thing. We're gonna get into Notre Dame like we always do. But we were talking before we went on the air. It's like it's October. The playoffs are here. We gotta hit some baseball at least a little bit.
I'm
anyway.
Good with that.
So we're gonna do that a little bit later in this hour after we look back at Stanford, look forward a little bit to Virginia Tech, and of course the game kicks off tomorrow, 8:21 p.m.
Oh man,
is the official kickoff time.
Oh boy,
that means you and me and Darren and Reggie Brooks separately, but at the same time, we're gonna have a late night tomorrow.
Sean, did you have your PEDs ready for tomorrow?
Oh my gosh, tell you what.
Oh boy,
we were loving that noon kickoff a couple of weeks ago at Wake Forest.
As a player though, I mean the 8:20 is like right up my alley. I love the late kickoffs, but now doing TV and radio, not so much a fan of the 8:21 kickoff.
So let's say you've got an 8:20 kickoff. What does Saturday morning look like at the hotel? Do you get to sleep in?
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So what's the day kind of look like typically?
Usually it's like a voluntary breakfast.
Okay.
And then there's usually going to be then like a mandatory brunch-ish type time where you can come down. There's probably still some breakfast food available, but starting to get into the lunchtime. What we started to do is we'd have like a short meeting to kind of get people ready and focused.
Start getting their mental
Yeah, but, you know, we'd still have enough time then to go back up to the room, kind of relax. Some guys would like to watch whatever football games were on earlier in the day, maybe a noon kickoff, and then go back down. You know, you'd go through and get taped, watch some more film. And then it's kind of like what a normal game day would be. You just push everything back a little bit. So whether it's your game day meal as a team and then a little more film, usually go through mass at the hotel before then you would take off. And then, you know, once you get into the bus, you got your police escort to the field. And then it's just your normal routine once you get there.
So bus is rolling about how long before a kickoff typically?
I'm not. Now, granted, it's different for every team and staff.
I'm not 100% sure.
4 or 5 hours, something like that.
That might even be. I want to say maybe 3.
Okay.
Maybe 3, because we usually have a good hour or so where we could kind of go down to the field. If we wanted to, some guys like to remain up in the locker room. Usually the linemen. They're like, listen, we don't need to go down.
I'm not doing any more than I have to.
We don't need to go down there and run around. But most of the skill guys and the quarterbacks, we'd go down and just kind of play catch and get warmed up, go back up, and then get our pads on, get dressed, and then we'd have our actual warm up where we'd go down and stretch as a team, go through positional work, run a few plays to get started, and then back up once more, pregame speech, and then down for the game.
Right.
But it's a long day when you have that 8:20 kickoff. So
absolutely.
It's important to make sure that you kind of get the grogginess out, but at the same time, you don't want to do too much too soon because, I mean, you could be playing until past 11, almost 12 o'clock.
Yeah. So. Exactly. We know it'll be going till around midnight tomorrow night. And, of course, you know, that's what a player's game day looks like. From Evan Sharpley's perspective, here's what tomorrow looks like here on 96.1 WSBT. ESPN's College Game Day comes your way at 10 a.m. So they'll be with you for a couple hours up until noon when CBS Sports Radio comes your way here on 96.1. Then at 3 o'clock, it's the Brian Kelly Radio Show. 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, Game Day with Evan Sharpley and Tim Growl. And your guests are...
We have Brian Radigan, who's the head orthopedic surgeon right now for the team, former Notre Dame player, former Colt.
Saw his son last week, Connor Radigan, St. Joe Connor. Indians, when they played Mishawaka.
Brian's always a fun guy to talk to on the road. He gives us a little picture on, you know, what's going on. And also, too, just kind of the health and feel of what the team, you know, what their kind of their mindset is. And then we'll have Mike Golick Jr., who I played with. And he's a good dude. He's always got some nice anecdotes, and he'll get you fired up and ready for the game.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm on. He did a little extended version with Golick and Wingo when they were on location this morning. So, all right, good deal. So that's at 4 o'clock tomorrow, game day with Evan and Tim. That'll be in studio, not out on location, obviously, since the Irish are playing in Blacksburg. 5 o'clock, we've got Budweiser's Game Day Sports Beat with Darren Pritchett, Eric Hansen from the South Bend Tribune, and we will come your way until 7 o'clock when the Notre Dame National Pregame Show begins. That will take you right up until kickoff. And again, I know all the published times say 8 o'clock, but we were told earlier this week, 8:21 p.m.
How many seconds after
20? Yeah, I know. Not 8:20, 8:21.
And 13 seconds.
Yep, exactly. And that's all right here on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. And then after the game, the late night version of the official Notre Dame football post-game show, Reggie Brooks and I will break everything down for you tomorrow night. I will avoid my cup of coffee because then I won't fall asleep afterwards. But we will be in here, hopefully ready to talk about an exciting Notre Dame-Virginia Tech game tomorrow. And then, of course, during the post-game show, we'll have Brian Kelly's press conference also, potentially other player interviews, press conferences, stuff like that, whatever we get. And then, of course, Evan Sharpley and Darren Pritchett. You'll have Inside Notre Dame Football distributed all across the country.
Correct.
And on Watch ND, they have that up. I went back and was looking at a little bit of that yesterday.
My forehead was less shiny this week. Did you notice?
I did.
A shout out to Sherry Nussbaum. She gave me some matte stuff for my forehead.
Very good. Yeah. Do you guys don't do like the makeup, the pancake stuff or any of that?
No, there's no makeup. There's not a makeup team.
There's no studio over there for you guys.
Well, we have a changing room, but no makeup. So
okay.
I had to resort to a little bit of stuff for myself because I was told that my forehead was a little
too shiny. It. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Fixed.
Well, you got a perfectly coiffed head of hair, of course. So, but that's always when you see the TV guys out, you can tell when they've just got off the air because they've still got their stuff on their face and all that kind of stuff. But that obviously helps cut down on the shine and makes you look less pale as well. So, all right, just about 10 after 12 o'clock on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Notre Dame coming off the win over Stanford last week, a big win for the Fighting Irish, says head coach Brian Kelly.
Yeah, I think our kids, when you look at victories as a football coach, as a head coach, there's always things that we can look at. I think I like the fact that we finished the game. You know, we started fast, but we finished. And that's where you, as a football coach, when you're looking at your team, you see a resolve, a mental toughness that you're really trying to build with your group. And we saw that today. So, yes, affirmatively.
A lot of stuff to like about that win last week, Mr. Sharpley.
Yeah, a lot. I think the biggest thing that Brian Kelly reiterated there, or that I'll reiterate from Brian Kelly, was how strong they played in the second half, limiting Stanford to just 31 yards. I thought they played very physical. You look at what the defensive line was able to do with just a four-man rush, Jerry Tillery with a huge game. Anytime you're able to do that, it really helps the back end play with a lot more confidence. And then another really impressive performance from Ian Book. Rhythm, consistency, accuracy, another 70% completion game, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions, and having Dexter Williams back. I think losing Jafar Armstrong, at this juncture of the season, but then getting Dexter Williams back was key for this game. But in my mind, one of the more complete wins as far as balance on offense, consistency on defense, some plays in special teams. This is, in my mind, a signature win for this program right now. I mean, it was a big win. And that's not to say that if they would have lost, their playoff dreams would have been dashed. But, man, their resume looks great right now. You have a win against Michigan, who Michigan has continued to play well. Although, man, their schedule, they play 3 weeks in a row where they go Wisconsin, Penn State, and Michigan State, and then obviously finish with Ohio State as well. So they have a tough road ahead, but Michigan and then now this Stanford victory and potentially a win against Virginia Tech, I think, bodes very well for their resume. Granted, there isn't another ranked team on the schedule, but the way Syracuse is playing, they could be ranked by the time Notre Dame plays them. Still a tough way to finish the season, just the amount of travel they're going to be going through, and you have to bring it every single week, but what they did against Stanford was very impressive.
Yeah, I did an interview with a radio station in another market earlier this week. The first thing they wanted to talk about was, okay, so can they make the playoff? And the first thing I brought up is what we've talked about since before the season started. 4 of the last 5 on the road. 1 home game in October, 1 home game in November, looking at it realistically. And they basically didn't want to, whatever. To me, They're still only 5 games in. As impressive as last week looked, I think you're getting
early.
Ahead of yourself a little bit to be talking about that already.
Listen, Virginia Tech is not the team I thought they were, but it's still a quality opponent in a very tough environment.
Right.
And you better believe that the fans are going to bring it when Notre Dame's coming to town.
Absolutely.
And it's now I don't, and I said this, I think I said this earlier in the week too, and I did another interview as well. I don't think that this Virginia Tech team, because there's a lot of comparisons right now between going to Miami. The environment may be similar, but I think Miami's team was much more talented than this Virginia Tech team.
Yeah.
Still dangerous though. And in college football, it's difficult to win every single week. And there are still a number of games on this schedule that I think Notre Dame's going to be favored in all of them.
And they are right now.
And I really like this defense. I think that they're going to be able to keep Notre Dame in every single game. But still college football. it's tough to predict this far out.
Let's talk about the defense a little bit, though, before we talk about the schedule and the environment, Virginia Tech and all that. They held Stanford at 220 yards on 51 plays, 31 yards on 20 plays in the second half, minus 13 yards in the fourth quarter. And there's a lot of things that go into that. One, the fact that they had gotten used to seeing these teams like Wake and Ball State and even Vanderbilt running high volume amount of plays, and Stanford was doing their own thing. So that helps in a few different ways. One, the defense played a part in limiting the plays that Stanford was going to run, even though they weren't going to run a whole lot anyway. But so they're not as taxed. The offense, though, as well, for a second straight week, held up its part of the deal. And that was kind of what Brian Kelly talked about when he talked about making the move to Ian Book, that sooner or later, when you're playing in all those close games and the offense can't keep kind of putting pressure on the other team, sooner or later, the thing is going to break. And it definitely didn't break the other night. It was kind of the perfect confluence of offense and defense complementing each other. And I know that's something Brian Kelly mentioned this week as well, where offense helped the defense and vice versa. And then in the fourth quarter, it was just release the hounds and the D-line got after KJ Costello.
Yeah, it was really interesting listening to Dalen Hayes. He was interviewed after the game, and they talked about how the defensive line knew most of the tendencies, like very specific tendencies and plays of Stanford. And I think part of that is David Shaw. I think part of that is we are who we are. We don't care if you know those things. We're still going to beat you.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a little prideful. I mean, this defensive line.
But David Shaw has always kind of come off like
that. And that is true. But this defensive line, I mean, they were calling, I mean, Dalen Hayes said they were calling out specific plays that were going to occur before they occur. If you know what's coming before it's coming, I mean, it'd be like having the answers to a test before you go into the test. I mean, it makes it a whole heck of a lot easier when you know where the ball is going. So that has to do with preparation. We've talked about that every single week, and I think dating back to Ball State where Brian Kelly mentioned a lack of preparation, and since then there's kind of been a 180 as far as what it's looked like Monday through Friday leading up to Saturdays. And this is another great job by the coaching staff in getting these players prepared and alerting them to these tendencies, but also a high level of focus from these players to be able to know what those tendencies were and go out there in those certain situations. You know, whether it's a first and 10, you know, the tendencies there, if it's a third and medium, you know, 5 to 8 yards, what those tendencies are, you know, based on formation and look. But it was a really impressive game, specifically that second half from really the whole defense. But more than anything, I think it's pretty awesome to see the steps forward from this defensive line where, you know, over the past 5 to 10 years, the biggest question mark has been quarterback pressures.
Right.
Not necessarily sacks overall, but now you have 4 or 5 guys with double-digit pressures, which has been unheard of here in South Bend.
Most of any team. They have 4 different guys. Jerry Tillery, 7 sacks, 12 hurries. Khalid Kareem, 2 sacks, 15 hurries. Julian Aguara, 1 sack, 16 hurries, though. And then Dalen Hayes, no sacks, but he has 10 hurries. And some of those hurries play to the fact of the type of team you're playing, like Wake and Ball State
tempo,
was trying to get it out early. Yeah, where they're playing more tempo. They're getting it out quickly, kind of like what Ian Book does. That's part of why he's able to avoid some sacks as well. But they really brought the pressure. Jerry Tillery had his biggest game with 4 sacks, a forced fumble, and 2 quarterback hurries as well. And here's Brian Kelly talking about him.
Well, you can't block him one-on-one. I mean, he showed that tonight. He was outstanding. He got the game ball tonight. He had 4 sacks. So anytime you have that kind of performance, you know, that just says about his development. Look, he came back for his final season because he wanted to continue to develop as a football player and as a young man, as well as take classes. he has his degree from Notre Dame already. So he wanted to develop, though, a pass rush that would really take off, and I think he's done a great job there.
And so what I kind of look at now is not that Virginia Tech is going to run do things like Stanford, exactly like Stanford. Ryan Willis, the transfer from Kansas, 17 interceptions in 2 seasons at Kansas. He transfers in. Josh Jackson was hurt in that Old Dominion loss a couple of weeks ago. And it's not that he is a statue back there, but he's not the most mobile guy. I'd say it somewhat similarly to KJ Costello. When Virginia Tech wants to run the ball, Notre Dame shut down Bryce Love last week. 17 carries, 73 yards for Love. 39 of it, though, of course, came on the touchdown run. The other 16 carries, he averages 2.1 yards per carry. So, I mean, if Notre Dame's front can perform like that again tomorrow, I've got to think that that that's going to be a long night for Virginia Tech's offense.
It's going to start with stopping the run.
Yeah.
If they're able to stop the run and make Virginia Tech one-dimensional, it's going to be, a very similar recipe as far as what this defense wants to do and what they did to Stanford.
Absolutely. I'm with you on that. Absolutely. How do you look at this game, just in terms of its big picture significance? It's almost, is it like, do we have to wait until the season plays out to really figure out how much significance this game carried, or was there even more in beating Michigan at the start of the year?
I think right now the Michigan game in my mind is still a bigger win. But like I said, with the schedule that Michigan has, I mean, they very easily could end up with 4 or 5 losses this year. And same with Virginia Tech. I'm interested to see how they do in the ACC with that schedule coming up in front of them. But, I mean, we're still talking about two very quality teams, quality programs and opponents. You know, if you're able to say we beat Michigan, we beat Stanford and Virginia Tech all in the first half of the season, you know, those are pretty impressive wins on your resume. And that's why, I mean, and I'm still saying this, Notre Dame could have a slip up as long as it isn't against a subpar team later in the season. I think they still get in with a one loss. But part of that could be dependent on how Virginia Tech plays the rest of the year and Michigan too.
And again, going back to the schedule thing and just the way this sets up with 4 of the last 5 away from Notre Dame, there, obviously you've got the Shamrock Series game in New York, but you've got 2 trips to the West Coast as well as that trip to New York, trip to Chicago, which isn't a long trip, but it's also going to be something different because they'll get on the bus and they'll have to bus into Chicago, which is going to be a little bit different thing for them than they usually do when their charter flight flies out of town and all that kind of stuff. So there's going to be some different things to deal with. And since they ran the table in the regular season in 2012, they are just 8-12 in the month of November since then. There's no way to get around that. And included in that stretch is 5 losses on the West Coast to either USC or Stanford. And as we know, Thanksgiving weekend, they're going to be at USC on the West Coast. Now, they've also beaten USC out there, but at the same time, that's the track record. That's something that is still in front of them that they're going to have to contend with. And you would hope that year 2 of the Bayless conditioning program helps. We've talked about different guys like the freshmen, the young guys coming in, maybe saving some legs and things like that. Once they get past that October 20th bye week, that's where they're going to have to start kind of plotting some of that stuff out and see how they're going to try to solve that equation.
Yeah, I think the bye week is going to be really important in developing a mental toughness going into that final month of the season. The bye week is coming at a good time. I mean, it's going to be set up where, I mean, they know what's coming. Mm-hmm. They know what that last week of October and then into November is going to look like. It's not a surprise. So making sure that is communicated by the staff, the leaders on the team, and the players, and that understanding on this is a unique scenario on where we're going. Just the different travel. I mean, it's hard. I mean, that takes a toll on you. I mean, we're not talking about professional athletes here where they don't have anything else but football. You know, there's other things that are going on in these guys' lives. You know, they got to balance classes, all of that. So it is very taxing. And the players, they have to do a good job of taking care of their bodies post-game, getting recovery, still getting some sleep. But that end of, you know, I mean, it's going to be a grind. And I don't really like that word, but that's what it is. I mean, it's going to be hard.
Well, again, I think a lot of people look at it and say, well, they charter and all that kind of stuff, which is true. But football is different than a basketball team, for example, all piling onto one airplane and flying out there. There are multiple buses and just everything that goes into the whole thing. And again, when you're talking about traveling across time zones and then coming back, you get in. Like when you get back in from California, it's like, what, like early mm-hmm. a.m., right? So you got your Sunday, but then you got to get up and go to class during the week.
Well, we still came in on Sunday.
I mean, and there you go.
You know,
I think they do well. They'll come in and watch some film.
Come
and
in and watch
like
some
that.
Film, get some treatment, usually do some type of workout. And then, you know, Monday you'd have guys, you know, set up with their position groups coming in, getting the beginnings of what the game plan is going to look like, moving forward from the previous game, and then, you know, kind of having a little bit of a snapshot on the tendencies of the team that you're playing, and then Tuesday you're back at it.
Yeah.
So it's, I just, it's very unique.
Yeah.
Very unique, the travel schedule.
Yep. So they've already played one road game, but tomorrow they will have their first big road test. And we've talked about the environment, the atmosphere at Lane Stadium in Blacksburg last year at Miami, how much that plays into this game, the whole thing. And we've heard about Metallica and everything else. So let's take a time out. When we come back, we'll talk about that, what kind of effect all that stuff could have on the Fighting Irish tomorrow. And we've also got some baseball talk coming up, Cubs, playoffs, the whole thing. Analytics. I know you're deep into analytics. I'm gonna throw something at you and see what you think about analytics. I like analytics.
You have to have a good balance.
I think so as well.
Yeah.
How do you find that balance with analytics? Because there's so many numbers out there, and especially the defensive side, which affects things so much as well with the shifts and everything else and the way you hit the whole thing. So we'll do that coming up in just a little bit as well, but we'll enter Sandman when we continue on 96.1 WSBT. Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley is brought to you by Sharpley Training. With us, you can be a champion. Call for your complimentary class, 574-226-8234. Visit sharpleytraining.com. Search for them on any of the social media platforms. Just search Sharply Training. We're also brought to you by Four Winds Casino, by Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing. Contact Joel Lading in Mishawaka or John Shaver in South Bend. By Zolman's Tire and Auto Care, voted the best tire store 2 years in a row. By Lechleitner Door, they open all the right doors, residential, commercial, and agricultural. Call 295-6311. By the Food Bank of Northern Indiana, together we can solve hunger. Learn more at feedindiana.org. By Carmela's at McCree's, McCree's Italian Bakery, for your tailgating needs, and Carmela's at McCree's, your post-game dining, and Kurt Outdoor Living. Make plans now to transform your backyard into an oasis with the experts at Kurt Outdoor Living. And we also, of course, want to mention Beef O'Brady's of Granger, where game time meets family time at the corner of State Road 23 and Bittersweet. See you at Beef's. More Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley right after this. Little Enter Sandman. Rumor has it they play that out there at Lane Stadium, Virginia
and
Tech.
And apparently yesterday on Pete Burns' drive home, he was playing it as well.
I saw your little Twitter exchange last night.
Yeah, thanks, Pete. I asked him how many skips it took for him to get to that song.
Uh-huh.
And then he responded.
He went
right in.
Man.
What's that, Tyson?
Boom.
Everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the face.
That's
and
right.
Man, he punched me right in the face. His response was, how many career touchdowns do you have? Well, rushing touchdowns.
Uppercut. Knock
now,
him out.
Do they count middle school and high school? Because if they do, then I had quite a few.
There you go. There you go.
Pete sent me a message. He goes, next time I say something like that, just ask how many Emmys I've won. All right. In good fun, though.
So he
All
gives you the fun. Ammo. That's perfect.
Yeah. Thanks.
All right. So Notre Dame at Virginia Tech tomorrow night. And again, our game day coverage begins at 10 a.m. tomorrow here on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Game day with Evan Sharpley and Tim Grau comes your way at 3 o'clock, or at 4 o'clock, rather, the Brian Kelly Show 3. Game day with Evan and Tim at 4. Budweiser's game day sports beat at 5. So all that is coming up tomorrow. And so first ever trip to Blacksburg now coming up. Nobody for Notre Dame has ever experienced this before. We hear all about it. Chris Fowler, who's going to be calling the game on TV, was tweeting about it the other day. Apparently there's some special surprise that's going to happen before the game as well. So Brian Kelly was asked earlier this week if he's talked to the team about last year's Miami atmosphere and their essentially lack of response to that. And here's what BK had to say.
Haven't talked about the Miami situation since we left Miami. It's been much more about environmentally handling the situations that will come before us. We certainly use that situation to create the situations that will come before us over the next few games that we have in front of us. No, we haven't gone back to the Miami situation other than creating opportunities for our players to handle the moment better.
And some of those opportunities have been the chaos periods that have been talked about going back to last spring, where every once in a while he even threw a soccer ball on the field and you had to snap that and figure out to do with it, as opposed to a football. They've been playing they were playing it Wednesday night, I guess. Darren and I were on the air, but the media, there was post-practice media availability that a lot of the media members got to go to. And as they were walking up to the Goog and the team was practicing outside, they've got Enter Sandman blasting out there, which I think is good because they're going to hear that song. They've probably heard that song quite a bit this week, so the impact is probably lessened
tomorrow
night.
When we played USC every week, when I played, they had their...
Did you play the stupid fight song?
That fight song played the whole practice. So the goal was, by the end of the week, you weren't hearing it.
Yeah. Tune it out, right?
But we also had... We had, normally on Thursdays, we would always have a noise practice. So if we were on the road, the whole offensive team periods, there would be a gigantic speaker right behind our huddle playing over and over again
Bruce Springsteen Bon Jovi.
So I know his greatest hits, and I know some of the hits, or I know some of the songs that aren't his hits now, too. So we played those, and then if it was a home game, then the defense would then have the noise.
Okay.
So always on Thursday, we always would do that. Inside, outside, there'd always be some type of noise to try to replicate. And certainly, here's the thing. If you've never been in that environment, you can't really replicate it. You could talk about it and try to prepare for it. But until you actually go there, and usually, it's kind of a little bit of a wake-up call early on in the game. For me, the biggest thing is momentum, not necessarily the stadium itself. If you go out there and execute early, the stadium and the sound can be a non-factor. Now, if you let the team get some momentum, they put a touchdown up on the board early, it can get out of control, and then it's like a runaway train.
And I think that's the biggest thing.
It's execution.
Because the song itself, even though we've talked about it, and it's, oh, great. But, that's the entrance to the field. It's not like when Mariano Rivera came to the mound after they played Enter Sandman, or Trevor Hoffman, Hell's Bells. It's not like they keep playing the song while he's out there pitching. They play the song when you come out, and they want that to be an intimidation factor, and the crowd goes crazy. And let's face it, it kicks off at 8:21. They're going to be enjoying their beverages all day long and be nice and lubed up and all that kind of stuff. No different than when Michigan came here for Notre Dame. Big environment there. But I think that is the absolute most important thing. At Miami last year, when we talk about this stuff, the Miami atmosphere snowballed because nothing went right for Notre Dame the entire first quarter, and that whole thing just reached a fever pitch, and it never stopped after that. The key is coming out, and again, just like Notre Dame with Michigan. Notre Dame got touchdowns. The crowd stayed in it.
It's huge.
Yeah, come out, make some plays early, take the crowd out of it, at least to some extent.
Got to start fast.
Yeah.
Survive the early fury. If you're able to do that, then it's a four-quarter game. If it gets out of hand early, then that crowd can be a factor, and you don't want that to happen.
And I still, when I look at this game objectively on paper, Notre Dame's defense is better than Virginia Tech's offense.
No doubt.
And Notre Dame's offense, as good, and the reputation that Bud Foster and Virginia Tech have, Notre Dame's offense should still be better than Virginia Tech's defense.
I still think it's going to be a good football game. I think the environment will play a little bit of a factor. I don't think it's going to play a huge factor as long as they go in and take care of business in the first quarter.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be a good college football game. 8:21 kickoff under the lights in Blacksburg. It's got to be fun for
absolutely.
These guys.
Oh, absolutely. Don't get me wrong.
It's got to be fun for these guys.
Yeah. What kind of looks do you think that Bud Foster could potentially throw at Ian Book, because Ian Book has not really struggled so far. And you look at a guy, Bud Foster's been coaching at Virginia Tech
since the late 80s. He's been the defensive coordinator there for 23, 24 years now. He's been around a while. Special teams and defense have been a big part of their success over the years. But, I mean, when you look at it, 78th in total defense, giving up 388 yards a game, 37th in scoring defense, a little over 20 a game, almost 21. Rushing defense, they're tied for fourth, but pass efficiency defense, they're 83rd. So, I mean, and Brian Kelly talked about it.
Teams are probably having success throwing, so why
exactly
run?
Exactly. Yeah. Those numbers do get skewed sometimes. Right.
Well, if I'm Bud Foster and I'm trying to rattle Ian Book, I mean, he's been over 70% in back-to-back games.
By the way, it's 12:38, and this is the first time we've talked about the quarterback in this show.
It's a new record.
Which is different for definitely us for like new, the last 2 months, I
definitely
think.
Definitely a new record, yeah. Well, they listed him as the starter. It's not or
That's
anymore.
That's right. There's no or on there.
Why didn't we lead with that one?
The little guy with the beard got the look over there.
Yeah.
On Tuesday.
Oh, man. So if I'm trying to change things up, and where has Ian Book had a lot of success so far? Getting the football out quick, and it's all been short to intermediate passes mainly.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm Bud Foster, I'm gonna say let's play more man coverage. Let's try to load the box, take away the run, and see if these guys can beat us deep in the intermediate to long range. I'm not saying I believe Ian Book can do some damage there. But to this point right now, most of his throws have been short to intermediate. There have been a couple of longer throws, but even some of the longer yardage passes have been catch and run.
But at the same time, the kind of throws Ian Book was making last week, it's not like he was throwing to a bunch of wide open guys.
Oh, no.
He was hitting windows.
And that's
tight windows.
And that's been the thing, is it's been rhythm, timing, and placement for him. And that's why this offense has taken a step forward.
Absolutely. And I think that his ability to pass last week opened up that running game that saw Dexter Williams end up with a career highs both, 21 carries, 161 yards. I don't think any of us thought we were going to see that from Dexter Williams, but we just found out 2 days before that Jafar Armstrong was going to be out, and then Tony Jones Jr. sprains his ankle as well. Now Jones is supposed to be back, and so I think when you look at that, as fresh a legs as Dexter Williams has, you probably don't want to throw him in there 20 carries a game if you don't have to right now,
well,
do you?
What was his previous career high
Eight.
Carries? Man.
He's young.
Yeah, he is.
He'll get all the rest he needs when the season's over, just like the defenders, right?
That's right. That's right.
All right. We'll talk more football coming up in a little bit. So you're not overly concerned about the environment, just to kind of tomorrow night, as long as they get off to a good start.
I would say that the first 5 minutes will be integral to how
most
this game
important
plays out.
Yeah.
It can become a problem if you let it. But these guys, I mean, they know what's coming. They know Metallica's going to be playing. They know it's going to be loud. They played in a loud stadium before.
Well, and I think they had to have, even though he said he didn't bring up Miami last year,
I'm sure the guys,
everybody was there, learned something from that. And the fact that I think Ian Book played in that game as well has to at least be some kind of, has to have some kind of value.
I mean, Ian Book, he's talked about, you know, the first couple plays he's nervous, and that's, I mean, that is good. Well, that's the same thing I always said too. You know, if you aren't nervous, then maybe you don't care. You know, it's mm-hmm. there's a high level there. Of buy-in and being a little bit nervous. But at the same time, he's never given off an air of or a lack of confidence. You know, it doesn't
look
like
the moment.
No, I mean,
that was his biggest asset, I think, last year.
When he came in and played a little bit last year and then made a start against UNC, you know, you didn't see a deer in the headlights look. He looked confident. You know, he was getting the ball out on time, playing with a high level of or a sense of urgency. And that's, you know, that's what he's brought to the offense right now. So if he, you know, last week was a big test against a good team, and now this next week it's a test on the road against a good team. So if last week and the week before is any indication of what, you know, the steps forward that he's taking, I think that bodes well. But just making sure that those first 5 minutes that your foot's already on the gas pedal, ready to go.
Yep. All right, we're going to hit some more football in a little bit. When we come back, though, is it time to break up the Cubs? Is Joe Madden's, are his days in Chicago, are they dwindling lockdown analytics. What does it mean to baseball? Good or bad for baseball? All that and more with Evan Sharpley and Sean Steyer's Leprechaun Lunch. 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. .45 on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley. I suppose there's a lot of people who would say that Joe Madden, cult of personality with the Cubs. Is the Joe Madden thing, experience, whatever you want to call it, is it too much? Has it run its course in Chicago? Theo Epstein said the other day, the day after the season ended in the wild card loss to the Rockies, Joe Madden is our manager. Now, he didn't say Joe Madden is definitely going to be here next mm-hmm. year. He pretty much stated the obvious. Joe Madden is the manager right now. He's under contract
fact.
For one more year. But, I mean, you've got both sides. There are people who would say, and I agree, and you and I were just talking about it off the air, they've had the best run of success that they've ever had, four straight years in the playoffs. Even Theo Epstein, when he was with the Red Sox, and they won their first World Series in 2004, they didn't make the playoffs 4 years in a row. It's tough to do what Joe Madden and the Cubs and Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer, what they've done for the last 4 years.
It's been pretty impressive. I mean, you know, whether I think – I don't think he's going away. I know right now there are a lot of upset fans. I mean, you're tied for the best record in the NL, and then you lose two games in a row, and you're not even in the playoffs. Then, you know, I think everyone's hitting the panic button because it's so fresh.
Yeah.
But if you take a step back and look what this team has done since Joe Madden has been there, it's pretty impressive.
No, absolutely. Again, I mean, they were tied for the best record in baseball, and so they had to play the one-game playoff to determine the division. Something I've been thinking about for a while, you've got 300-win teams in the American League. Two of them are playing now in the first round of the playoffs. Then you had a team like Tampa Bay who had to play in that same division with those two teams. And they finished just one game behind Cleveland, which won the Central, which had a division, 200-game losers in the division. And everybody in the division had a losing record but them. Does it even make sense to have divisions, right? And then you throw interleague play into the whole thing. Do divisions even make sense? Just seed it from 1 through 5 when you get to the playoffs?
Very similar conversation with the NBA, too. I mean,
yeah.
You know, instead of having, you know, the conferences have actual rankings of the teams.
Yeah.
I like that. I mean, I think it would make it a little more interesting and intriguing. You're probably going to end up finding overall the best collection of teams, and then you're not going to have 200-game winners playing each other. You know, I think it would iron some things out. I don't know if it'll end up happening. I don't think it's going to happen in the NBA either, but I mean, I like that. I would like that moving forward if they can come up with the right setup.
Now, I have heard that baseball wants to expand by two more teams, and if that happened, the divisions as we know them now would completely go away. Now, there would still be divisions, but they were talking about like a shape where, for example, like St. Louis and Kansas City might both be in the same division. You'd have a bunch of four-team mm-hmm. divisions, so it'd still be out there. But then they would also add another tier to the playoffs. I don't like one-game playoffs either, you know, as far as the wild card goes. Because
especially if you're playing 162 games.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you shorten the season, maybe.
Yeah. Now, this has nothing to do with what happened this week. I've said before, here's what would be interesting to me, because I would like to give a bigger advantage to the division winner who has to play that wild card. You figure out a way, and you hear about three-game series, and then you start later in your division series and all that.
We played three-game series in the minor leagues.
Yeah.
I liked those.
Or play a doubleheader on one of the days.
Whoa.
And a single game the next day. Then
There's no chance they do that.
I mean, they wouldn't.
There's no chance.
But that would give the the division winner an advantage.
Yeah, that ain't happening.
No, you're probably right. But specific to the Cubs, like I look at it, I think they're going to have to do something to shake up what they've got. And that was something else Theo Epstein mentioned the other day, was they're going to look more at production rather than prospect value, potential, that whole thing. Are you actually producing? Because I think you look at, you've got three first-round guys, Schwarber, Happ, and Almora. And while they've all brought different things to the Cubs, you've got those three, Jason Hayward, who's not going anywhere.
But should.
But he's locked in for five more years. He's got player options. He's not going to, why would you opt out? He's got opt-out clause in there. Why would you opt out when someone's going to pay over $20 million?
You wouldn't.
No. There's no way. Jason Hayward is there for the next 5 years. Ben Zobrist is going to be 38 next year. And so he's probably, while he can play second base, I think his value is starting to diminish for what he brings you in the field, or what he brings you at the plate is going to be probably offset analytically the other way. I think they've got to find a way to get some more speed in that lineup, because outside of Javi Baez, there is not much in the defense. And that was a big part of winning their championship as well. Defensive analytics and their outfield defense is not as good with the guys that they've got to put out there.
It still baffles me, though, with the names that you're rattling off, how this offense doesn't put up five a game. I mean, at least.
Well, here's my question to you. Analytics, sabermetrics. Now, this is a big, broad question. Are they good for baseball?
Are they good for baseball?
Yeah. Are they better for baseball than the downside?
Yes.
You think they are still?
Yes, because it has improved the development of players.
Because you can look at the numbers, correct, and put value on different things they're doing.
If you look at just the overall, there are more 100-mile-an-hour pitchers now than ever.
Yeah. Let me stop you right there then.
Okay, stop me.
Because the art of contact, put the ball in play, has gone away. But
the Cubs did average. They averaged 4.65 runs a game.
Yeah, but they also had, 40 games where they scored one or two, runs, which was second only to the Baltimore Orioles, who fired their manager.
Bad.
My question, should productive outs made, should there be more value
in
that? What's
a productive out?
Well, advancing the runner.
Okay.
For example, let me give you an example.
Those are good. I mean, that's your goal. I mean, when you're up to bat, strikeouts have gone up quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Pitching has gotten better, though. I mean, Jordan Hicks throws a 100-mile-an-hour sinker.
And I asked you a question, and I didn't let you completely answer it. But part of analytics right now is it doesn't matter how the out is made. An out is an out, so they don't care about the strikeouts. You swing for the fences more, but you also have more strikeouts at a record-setting level. So you're not advancing runners. Mm-hmm. That's things
I don't know. I mean, I think from an outside view, and I get this a lot too in my profession and developing hitters, is we aren't trying to swing for the fence. I mean, the goal is to hit line drives all over the park, gap to gap. If it just so happens that it goes over the fence, that's the most dynamic hit in baseball, or softball for that matter too. But your approach still is slightly different when you do have a runner in scoring position or need to move the runner. I mean, a sac fly is popular.
Well, but that's an area where the Cubs really struggled, especially early in the season. They got a little bit better. They struggled with runners at third and less than two outs getting those guys.
Yeah,
home.
That's a no-no. If your approach is to hit it far, you still got to get the ball up in the air. Mm-hmm. I mean, but at the same time, I know I mentioned this a couple minutes ago. I mean, the pitching, it's harder to hit now, I think, than ever before. There are a lot of really good pitchers with some nasty stuff.
Which is why if your approach is more about contact than hitting it far, you should be able to touch those guys with 90-plus mile-an-hour stuff, right?
If you're trying to just make contact?
Well, not just contact. You still want good contact. But rather than hit it out of the park.
So here's the thing with that. So, you know, what gets overplayed right now? launch angles. Okay, launch it.
Right.
It is. I guarantee you, if we went and talked with hitters, they're not going to talk to you about launch angles. They're going to talk to you about attack angles and trying to match the plane of the pitch. That doesn't necessarily mean that you're trying to swing for the fences, but there's an aspect, too, of intent. Like, you're trying to hit the ball hard. I'm not going to go up there and be like, all right, I'm going to try to hit this ball as soft as possible and just make contact. But
no.
With two strikes, you have to have a two-strike approach.
Right.
You have to have a plan up there with two strikes. So when you're looking, when I'm talking about matching the plane, you know, there are right now, you know that a pitch is coming slightly downhill towards you. Fastball's around 6 degrees down off the mound. A curveball's around 12. So if you're trying to match that plane as a hitter, you're trying to stay between 6 and 12 degrees swinging slightly up.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean you're trying to hit pop-ups. You're also not trying to hit ground balls. I mean, you're trying to hit line drives.
But my point is this, okay, the art of moving runners on the bases is essentially a lost art. I was doing a South Bend Cubs game last year, and I'll try to make this real quick. There's a runner at second with nobody out. The pitcher on the mound is dealing. He is, and this is against the South Bend Cubs. He's dealing. He's burying changeups and curveballs. They're swinging and missing. They're chasing pitches. So there's a runner at second for the Cubs. Nobody out. Kid at the plate with two strikes, flicks the ball to second base, advances the runner to third base. Then all of a sudden, with a runner at third, this guy can't bury pitches in the dirt anymore. He elevates something, base hit, mm-hmm. run scores. And that's what I'm talking about by more productive outs like that, where not everything.
Right.
But you just don't see guys doing as much anymore.
I would say productive outs and quality at bats would be two areas I would like to see emphasis on. You know, whether it's you seeing 10 pitches or 12 pitches or fighting off and being able to move the runner like that.
Right. We're going to have to wrap things up. We're going to go to the top of the hour with a break. We will talk to you next week. See, we need to talk more baseball because there's just never enough time. Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch. We'll talk to you next week. 96.1 WSBT South Bend.